We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Djadjawarong country.
Welcome to episode 123 of the Beyond 90 podcast. This is Eric Sabihana hosting once again, and we've got a fab for you to cover what has been another massive week in Australian women's football. The dub is back. How good? How good? So we've got plenty to talk about as always, but of course I should introduce my guests. So firstly, down in the Garden State, Victoria, coming back after some time away. Welcome back, our editor-in-chief, Cheryl Downs. How are you?
Oh, thanks very much, Eric. It's great to be back. I really miss talking to the gang on the pod and talking to anyone that's listening out there as well. Don't know how people's gardens are faring at the moment, given all the cold weather and snow that we've had today. So it's been super special. But other than that, brilliant.
Okay, yep, that's good. And hopefully everyone's staying safe with the extreme weather that we've been experiencing. And then we're now caught up in the allegedly Sunshine State, though it isn't always. Madge, it's been an interesting week for you, to say the least.
Yeah, no, it's been a very sunny Sunshine State this last week, so we've definitely gone into summer mode up here, nice and hot. Yes, I finally succumbed to sickness and the spicy cough as well, finally, unfortunately, but so that made me very unhappy that I wasn't able to make the first round of the dub, but I did sit at home and of course watch it on 10 play, so I was very happy that I was able to still catch up on all of the dub action that we'll talk about later.
Yep, and of course joining us from myself, Del Roots, how are things going for you?
Thankfully no wild weather here. It's been very, very windy, but yeah, was really impressed with the football back this week. Lovely to see. I think that it was a good, like, not that all weeks of the dub aren't good, but it was good this week because there were so many kind of great storylines that kind of permeated the draw or the fixture. So yeah, worked really, really well. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's a good week. It was possibly, you know, one of the best possible weeks you can have in the dub with somebody missing. Anyway, moving on to the last person I will introduce, and I've just left him to last because we actually did have breakfast yesterday. Stefan Mobus, our Canberra Nordic expert. I mean, I did see you yesterday, but how are things going?
Yeah, hi everyone. Yeah, going really good, and it was terrific to share the McKellar Park experience with you this weekend for round one, Eric. It was really nice to get together and watch a terrific game.
It was a game. I can't wait for this any longer. I need to show off this incredible Grace Ma customized Canberra training jersey, so it looks incredible. Shout out to Helen Ritchie from who runs the Canberra United merchandise, and whose daughter Georgia is Canberra's number four keeper for this season. I ordered it, I think, just as the teams were kicking off. I picked it up after the game, already customized. They're so quick. I could have picked it up wanted to. So Canberra United merchandise team is certainly doing a great job. But anyway, let's move on to our history lesson for this week. So Matilda's cap 123 is Carla Reuter. She made her Matilda's debut in an away game against China in 2003, and her final national team appearance 7 years later was also away to China. She went to the 2003 World Cup, the 2004 Olympics, and three Asian Cups, so 2006, 2008, and the victorious campaign of 2010. Apologies, I feel like this is right, but apologies if I got these numbers wrong. My research shows she made 58 appearances for the Matildas, 49 of which were internationals, and Carla was a defender. Domestically, Carla Reuter, like Madge, very much from Queensland, made 43 WNSL appearances over 5 seasons for Queensland Sting and 31 A-League Women appearances over 4 seasons for Brisbane Roar. So certainly wherever Carla is, we hope she's doing well. And if she chooses to be, we hope she's still involved in football. So let's move on to, I think, the hottest topic. It feels like so long ago, but on Tuesday, in the central coast of New South Wales, Matildas 2, Thailand 0. So who would like to go first on that game?
I'd just like to say how impressed I was by Thailand. I knew that they would be a difficult opponent to break down. They had, my understanding was that their only two non-locally based, or two of their only non-locally based players didn't make the trip. But yeah, I was super impressed by them. They probably should have had a goal. I think it was in the second half. Should have had a goal, but yeah, I was super impressed by them. Just their defensive resilience, but also their quite immediate press from the front. As soon as the Matildas centre backs kind of got on the ball, just immediately pressed them and looked to make Australia play wide instead of through the middle, which I thought was not necessarily causing the Matildas any great harm or concern, but it was good to see that they had a game plan and they were obviously sticking to it. But otherwise, yeah, I thought the Matildas were unlucky not to be probably 6-0 up by halftime. But, you know, they took the opportunities where they could. Another team would have made them pay, but I think you've kind of got to iron these kicks out, and especially after having played so well against Sweden, you've got to kind of try and continue ironing those kicks out when they come.
Hey, Dale, can I interject a little bit? And so you said Australia were unlucky to not be up 6-0 or something or other. Do you think it was unlucky, or do you think that that's more than unlucky and that we need to work harder on capitalising on the opportunities that we get? Because I think that's the difference between great sides and good sides. Like, we did have a lot of chances and maybe we should have smashed it a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree with that to an extent. I think also sometimes... as you would have seen with Kerr, I think she had three opportunities in the first 20 minutes to score and didn't put any of them away, and then eventually scored. But I think, yeah, I think the point that you make around, but the difference between a good team and a great team is great teams take their opportunities, and good teams create opportunities, but great teams take them. But yeah, I think that we all know that. We think about the game against South Korea in the Asian Cup, and we had all of those chances and didn't take any of them and got bundled out. Yeah, it was a little bit reminiscent of that. But you're right, it is more about taking the chances than kind of looking back on them and saying, oh, we created a lot. You've got to, as you say, you've got to kind of take them.
I think there's often a lot of cliches in football, and that is sometimes one of them, that that teams always take their chance, like the great teams always do. But there's plenty of games, I think, where you see great teams dominate and then they just finally get that goal. So other teams put in a good effort, and Australia was one of those teams, I think, used to put in like good efforts against the US, but then US would just eventually get their goal and beat us. So I think sometimes it can just be really bad luck. And I think, you know, Kerr just, yeah, with that shot off the crossbar that another day would have gone over, just that few inches more. Hayley Razzo, you know, she spends so much of her energy getting in the right positions and harassing it, and that sometimes her finishing lacks a little bit. But I think she hit the post two times outright, I think, during the game. So, but they, you know, managed to get the two chances that they did. So, yeah, I think they would be disappointed, because I think Tony did go in with the express want to get a fast start, and unfortunately we didn't get that again. So I think, yeah, so as far as what they were probably wanting to get from the game, they didn't get it. So I think from that perspective, they would be a little bit disappointed with the performance. But when you go in with a game plan and it doesn't go the way that you're hoping it to go, all you can do is you know, get back to it and grind out the result, and they were able to do that. But yeah, would have liked to have seen a few more goals go in. But big positive, it was great to see players like Matilda McMara get her debut, and of course seeing KK get on the field as well. I think was just wonderful to see.
Stefan, anything else to add?
Yeah, we started the game with the lineup that started the Sweden game. So we didn't play with the precision though that we did after the first half hour against Sweden. And there's something about the way that Thailand sets up or our approach to the game, which which makes us slightly untidy, I think, at times. So yeah, still very highly dominant performance, but didn't have the beautiful precision that we saw in a lot of the Sweden game.
I actually think a lot of that goes back to what Dale was saying about their pressing.
Yeah.
I think the Matildas do get rattled by a little bit. Not that they looked particularly rattled in this game, but I think we need to play more against teams that do press us, and we need to get better under that pressing pressure.
Yeah, and they've done it to us. I was at the last Thailand game as well, or one of the last Thailand games here as well, a couple of years ago, and it was the same sort of thing. We just weren't tidy enough, and there's something about the way they set up that rattles us a little bit, even though we seem to be dominant. So, yeah, as you said, good experience to play against different styles, different setups. Really nice to see all the changes in the second half, got to say. So that was very enjoyable, yeah.
For me, I just look at from a goalkeeping perspective, Tegan Micah locked in at number one by the look of it. The other things to look at, I think it was frustrating as a fan to watch it. I imagine as a player, it was probably frustrating to miss some of those chances, and that's going to fuel some of their fire as well. It was still a win, and going back to what a couple of you have mentioned as well, it's not always about winning the beautiful game by playing beautiful football. Sometimes you win a bit ugly. I don't think it was ugly. They were certainly dominant, but I think that it just could have been better. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe to know that we can be better and still win, that's a good thing. But, yeah, still a bit frustrating for me. Nice way to end the year, though, with, you know, you worry about those games with injuries or any such thing. So to get out of that with a win, looking good, yeah, happy.
Yeah, so I think I don't have much to add, at least from a tactical perspective, but that once again, shout out to the great folk at Matilda's Active Support for organising pre-game drinks at Hotel Gosford. It's good to catch up with all the Matilda's fans, and it's just always able to organise this, even when a lot of them do not live locally to wherever the Matildas game is being played. And obviously, I just have to say, I let out an unashamedly deleted score when I saw Matilda McNamara was going to come on the field. So I refuse to apologise if I annoyed anyone in the press box. And also, I got a selfie with Matilda after the. And was I meant to be standing in the particular part of the stand where I was? Well, I don't care.
Hey, I got a question as well. Madge, in terms of the Matildas Active, are you growing as we're getting closer to the World Cup? And a shout out, there's 240 days until the opening match at the World Cup. And I've certainly seen on the Facebook group that we administer, the Matildas and A-League Women's Supporters Group, that's jumped up to over 5,500 supporters now. So we're seeing growth and maybe more visibility, maybe more interest. I wonder if that's happening in the active support as well, because you've been doing such a top job.
Yeah, I think so. It's one of those things where there's different types of fandom, and we try to cater for both. So one, we wanted to sort of create those pre-game opportunities just for everyone who just wants to get together and catch up before the game and, talk about, what they think the lineup should be and all those sorts of fun community things. And then there's the active support stuff at the game. And yeah, we have noticed that I think numbers have been growing. People are starting to really sort of engage with our song sheets and things like that at the game. It is one of those things where I think these last couple of games, I complained about it last pod, but it's a little bit difficult when the stadiums decide to make the active section allocated seating. It makes it really difficult for us to pull people in who really want to be involved. So we have to do a bit of wrangling and sort of negotiation with people sort of around the section so that we can get together. But we'll keep working with FA on that so that we can get sort of general admission or come up with options so that we can make sure we get all those people who want to be loud and making noise in a coordinated way sort of in the same spot together. But yeah, we're trying to get out there with our chants and our songs, get them sort of well known in the community. So yeah, just absolutely check out our social media, our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We've got all of our links there to song sheets, and we try and put up videos and stuff of what happens during the games.
Cool.
Yep. So I think That's definitely plenty. But of course, there was the weekend, of course, and round one of A-League Women, one of the happiest times of year for us. So before we get into the games, I'd like basically anyone's thoughts on the new interactive show that covers all the simultaneous Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff. So unfortunately, due to your isolation, Madge, you would have been that for sure. So I think we'll start with you.
Yeah, I had one laptop doing the streaming for the Raw Newcastle game up on the TV. Then I had another laptop to have Dub Zone in the corner. I think because I was really wanting to watch one dedicated game, it was a little bit difficult. So it was good because I watched like the 15 or so minutes beforehand, and I thought it seemed like a really good concept. Probably would have been a little bit better if I was in neutral for all of the games that were going on simultaneously, because then I was kind of like, I was just tended to put down the volume on Dub Zone and just concentrate on the game that I was wanting to watch on the TV. But I think it's a concept that, yeah, if you're a neutral and you just want to sort of keep a general eye over all games that are going on at once, I think it's a great idea. It's good having, and it sounds like they're going to have a rotating panels every week as well, yes, which I think will be really good. Getting different perspectives from week to week. And I thought all the panelists did fantastic. So it's fantastic to see some fresh and new voices on the airwaves as well. Great concept. But and like anything, a few kinks here and there, which I'm sure they'll progressively work on throughout the season. I think sometimes too often these days we look at the first iteration of something and go in really hard, but I think they'll obviously look back on any feedback. I thought the interaction on Twitter was great. It seemed to generate a lot of people wanting to sort of tag in the Dub Zone and sort of offer up their ideas and their photos if they were at the game, and being able to share those sorts of fan experiences, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, I would agree. I didn't catch a great deal of it, but what I did catch, I was pretty impressed with. Obviously, as Madge says, like there's things that'll need to be worked out. I think they need to figure out whether they want to be a podcast that happens to record while all the games are going on, or something more like NFL Red Zone, which I think is what they've been modeled off, where you kind of cut between action at games, which is slightly difficult to do, or more difficult to do because obviously with American football's kind of stop start nature, when you can kind of cut in and things like that. But as you were saying, I think that the kind of the cavalcade of talent that they've got is really impressive. They've obviously got a little bit of leeway is probably the wrong word, but they've got a remit in which they can kind of try things out, and I think that that's really important. The thing that interests me now is whether this will mean that we could potentially have simultaneous kickoffs on the last day of the season, because ooh, if we've got one coverage that's doing all of the games, then there's no reason why we can't have all of the games kick off at once, and all of those games be covered on separate streams, because there's no airtime that we're worried about. The channels that they're made up channels, they don't exist in like on a guide. So I think that'll be interesting to see going forward. But in terms of the product, pretty impressed. The one thing that I think that it lends itself well to, as you said, is kind of like the Eurovision broadcast, where you get, people tweeting in from the game or sending, Dub at the pub or whatever's going on away from the screen. So, yeah, I was impressed. I think that there's work to be done. But as you say, Madge, I don't want to go too hard too soon. It's a very nascent product at this point.
I didn't see it, but I'm looking forward to giving it a re-look and look at the next match as well, just because when I look at the A-League matches for next week, even though we've got three Melbourne teams in the comp now, we don't have a match next week in Melbourne, so that'll be interesting. Madge, I was interested, though, how does one become neutral in football? Because I always find that I'm backing someone. Doesn't matter who's playing, I'm backing someone. So I think I'd be shattered trying.
Oh, there's always vibes, but I find that my vibes don't turn up until the game's actually started often, unless I've got some other reason that's actually attached to my club, so it's not really neutral. But I
aspirational.
I think that's probably, that for me is probably just the one downside, in that when you've got three games of what, how many are we always going to have, like five games in a round,
yeah.
when three of them are always going to be simultaneous, chances are there's going to be one game that I'm really wanting to concentrate on. So that's probably just the biggest downside, but I'm already a mega fan, whereas this sort of program, maybe it should be targeted towards the more general fan, and trying to expand our audience and showing the breadth of the product that's out there. So I think it's definitely a good concept to keep plugging away with, and I'll be looking forward to the time that Brisbane aren't in that simultaneous three games, so I can actually just sit down and maybe just have it dedicated and check it out a little bit more closely.
So it's kind of like a live wrap. Instead of watching 10 hours of football per week, you can watch the show or watch and listen to the show, and you kind of get some sort of perspective across all the games, which maybe isn't bad for everyone's partners.
And something they could do, and I don't think they did this on the Dub Zone. Oh, and also, can I say, they should have also called it the Dub Hub. I mean,
yes,
the name was right there. But, you know, there we go. It's the marketing people missed that trick. But I know with the FFA Cup coverage that they've had previously, and I don't think they had this on the Dub Zone, but having like the siren go off.
Goals, yes. It, so,
yes.
Yes.
That
so
would
stop
be awesome.
What are we talking about, basically. There's been a goal. There's been a goal at MacKellar Park. Which way has it gone, etc. So,
yes. That would probably be a short term, thing. That
What happens if you don't want the mystery solved for you? So, I think shout out to Molly, who's a big fan of the pod and has joined the pod a number of times as well. But sometimes I think Molly, maybe not in A-League Women, but certainly in World Cup or big matches around the world, don't tell me what the result is. I'm banning myself from social media. If you're just kind of trying to get the gist of what's happening on one game and then they're throwing to all sorts of others, maybe it spoils it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Great concept.
Yes, I like that they've used this to bring a lot of women into media. So shout out to, I've got to remember the names, Taryn Heddo, Pokwa Frimpong, and Georgia Rajic, who I believe they're all Victorian. I believe they've all come through something called the APL's Talent Development Program. I know Taryn, apart from being a football manager expert, has done some commentary in NPL Victoria. So great to see her, hear her voice on, I think it was Canberra versus Perth. And so like the point about Madge saying, well, this is just the first go, they can refine the process, because something like this, you can't rehearse. It's not like, say, a quiz show that can have a pilot episode. So this is really the first go for everyone. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they improve something that's already very good.
We didn't see a tuba in anybody's lounge room. So
also good.
We're already on the up.
Yeah. Or a big mystery graphic that like blocks the middle of the screen for like 3 minutes.
Somebody went as the Dub Hexagon to Halloween last year, which I think was very inventive.
Quickly on the broadcast though, because I was sitting at home, sad that I couldn't be at the Brisbane Newcastle game live. Wasn't really impressed with the stream at the Brisbane game. I know it was windy. They're up on the scaffolding with just like the one camera. And I think I said this on Twitter, like I'm all for reducing the broadcast requirements so that we can have more suburban games or more flexibility around the venues that are used for the Dub this season. But I don't want it to be an extreme of, oh, well, we have to have the highest quality venues, the big, huge ones, and then, you know, like the huge broadcast HD definition cameras that cost a fortune, or one camera that's shaky and pretty awful and doesn't follow the ball. It doesn't have to be the extreme.
Yeah.
I do think the APL should review all of the broadcasts and do better on the ones that weren't great. And if they need to invest a little bit more money, they should do so, because I think some of the streams weren't fantastic.
I think the two games that I watched, which was Wellington Phoenix and Melbourne City and then Western United, Melbourne Victory, I don't think either one of those ticked the box of a beautiful broadcast. And that's, like you say, it's okay to be iterative, but sometimes it just seemed like the ball was too far. Or maybe that's an advocate for making sure that you get to the game as well, because you're going to have a better experience. I was cold and lazy to a degree and stayed at home, if the broadcast experience was phenomenal, maybe more people would just stay at home and watch the telly or the stream.
Okay, so I have to think about it. I think it's time to go through to the actual games because we've been waiting for this competition for so long. Just because Stefan hasn't talked in a while, let's start with McKellar Park, the best venue in A-League Women, and Canberra United 2, Perth Glory 2. Go on, Stefan.
All righty. Let us begin by saying that the freshly cut grass at the McKellar Park car park that Eric and I both sat in absolutely got us both. We're both unable to function much in the actual game. So hats off.
Speak for yourself, but I know Stefan's referring to hay fever, which seemed to affect him more than me. But
hats off to you, Eric, for making it to the presser. I didn't want to submit my streaming eyes and teary eyes and sniffles to everyone else at the presser. But yeah, it was windy. It was a great day out. Really enjoyed it. Big crowd there too. 1,263, I think, in the stand.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's going to have to give a bit of a view about the Perth team a little bit later because I tend to concentrate on what I see.
That's all right.
Side, but that's fine. Yeah. So just on the as far as the Canberra starting lineup goes, Chloe Lincoln got selected in as the starting keeper, which was, I mean, Keely Richards is fantastic as well, but it was just really, really nice to see that Nagos should put some faith into Chloe to start the season. He also selected Sasha Grove at right back, which was also wonderful to see. We found out later, talking to Hayley Taylor-Young on the sideline, that she talked to my friend Lucy, that she'd rolled her ankle at training and is out for about 4 weeks. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that right back spot once Hayley's fit again. Sasha had a wonderful game, absolutely killed in the second half in particular, was everywhere. So yeah, really good to see her start the season really strongly. In the centre-back, there was a bit of competition for the centre-back spot shared alongside Kennedy Faulkner. Kennedy Faulkner, the import from Canada, had a wonderful game, especially first half, I found. She was very strong in the centre of defence. But Madison McComiskey from MacArthur Rams beat out the two Victorians for the starting centre-back spot over Holly Murray and Grace Taranto. And the formation that we played, that Canberra played, and our really strong...
No, say it.
We've got a really strong cohort in our midfield. I find they've recruited very, very well in midfield. So there was no starting spot for Laura Hughes, but she did make it onto the park in the second half. So the first half was a pretty frantic affair, I've got to say. The speed was high. The intensity was high. Really good to watch. Michelle Heyman has said on social media today that she thinks that the first half was some of the best football that's ever been played by the club. So it was really good to see. And it was.
That is an outrageously hyperbolic comment. I just want to jump in there.
it is, but it was pretty good to watch, wasn't it? I mean, it was... yeah, it was some good football from both sides, I think, really. Especially for a round one game, everyone's obviously pumped and excited and going 100 miles an hour. And I think in the second half, perhaps they're starting to run out of legs a little bit, especially in the Canberra side, having had a shorter preseason than Perth. But, not universally, though. But Just going through the action quickly. Grace Jarlay scored after 12 minutes off a Grace Marr corner. So Grace Jarlay played at left mid, and that's a bit unusual for her. And she said at the post-match presser that it's not really where she's accustomed to playing, but she's happy to play where the coach would like her to play. Liz Anton for Perth replied just after half an hour, also off a corner at the front post, sort of nudging it into the net. Vizna Milivojevic got us back up 2-1 up just before half time after our Chinese import Cheng Shu Wu, otherwise who lost to be known as Gigi, won the ball and passed to Grace Ma, who took the ball upfield, basically from the halfway line towards the penalty area, and magnificently held the release of her pass to Vesna until Vesna had found just the right amount of space for her shot. So tucked it underneath the keeper. So 2-1 up at half time. And Vesna really impressed as well with her work rate. She was very Michelle Heyman-like in her ability to shut down the opposing defence, and was really pumped and up for this game. So you could see that when she scored, actually her reaction to the goal, what it meant to her, and that really helped the team as well. In the second half, in the 64th minute, Gabriella Lindsay-Coleman squared the game up after Sierra Hinson managed to get past McComiskey on the byline and centered the ball, squared it back from the byline towards Coleman. So that leveled the game up. And there were chances to both sides, a couple of misses by Nikki Flannery, who had a fine game as far as endeavour, but missed one or two chances. But, you know, it's early days. And I think the forward line in particular was pretty dynamic for Canberra. So there's some good things ahead, we think, with that group. Canberra will perhaps feel like maybe they could have come away with the points, but there was also moments for Perth where they perhaps might have felt the same. Perhaps in the end, that a 2-2 result wasn't unreasonable. The game stats were very interesting. All the possession, well, a lot of the possession was with Perth over Canberra. Also, the corner stats were with them, but Canberra have far more shots and shots on targets. So very interesting sort of disposition, match up there. And, just a really good entertaining affair with some good things to take out of both sides, I think. So I think that's probably all I wanted to say. Oh, it was a 50th game for Canberra United for Nicoletta Flannery. So that was congratulations to her. And, has anyone got anything to say about the Perth players?
No, I want to talk about the atmosphere at McKellar Park. Sorry, Perth, but I think because this is the first time.
Was this your first? This was your first time in a neutral capacity at McKellar Park?
This is my first time not annoying the United coach at the post-match press conference, but that's another story.
Not in the employ of another club.
Yes, and so it's just I mean, the day started wonderfully with me getting a haircut from Emma Ilioski's mother, Catherine, at one-to-one hair. And so Catherine and I both rushed to the game. As I said earlier, really the quick service from the merchandise tent was brilliant, especially because what I actually like about this season is 3 o'clock kickoff means 3 o'clock. It's not 3:07. So
yeah, how good. Yeah,
that's nice. And so I had to rush. And also shout out to the good folk at Belconnen United, the host club, of course, of McKellar Park. You use it for the NPL season, running the canteen and the barbecue as well. Got a lovely Kransky roll at halftime.
Nice.
Yes, but so yeah, really had the full McKellar Park experience.
Did you indulge in a capital beer?
No, I did not, but I did have a glass of red with Stefan post game.
Of course.
Yes.
The silly question.
Yes.
It is great though. It is kind of like, especially from what I recall, that it wasn't like super sunny, but like when you go to McKellar Park on a sunny day, it's like the beach without the beach. People with their sun, you know, with their umbrellas and their picnic rugs and kids running around. And I've played there personally. It's a great ground to play on. The pitch didn't look quite as good as Viking Park, I have to admit, but it's a great little spot. I think Canberra are very lucky. We're very lucky to have such a wonderful ground in our city.
Yeah, and a shout out to whoever that was, the a smart individual in a County Kerry GAA jersey. And I'm told that County Kerry is the dudes in County Kerry jerseys. They're the Irish version of random South Sky. So
yeah, Kerry is the by far the most successful Gaelic football county in Ireland. And they are everywhere around where I live. We have a really big Irish population around where I live, and they are County Kerry jerseys are everywhere.
Oh, it's good to know. So let's move on to really the be, I think, the storyline of round one, a little furthest to Cheryl. Western United 1, Melbourne Victory 0, Jess McDonald scoring the winner against her old club in what looked like an incredibly windy City Vista recreation area.
Yeah, super, super windy. So I wasn't at the game. I did admit to being a bit soft and not going out there, but
probably good season though.
Well, I mean, based on, I was actually trying to have a look to see if there were numbers for the number of people who turned up at the ground, but it looked pretty busy. And if anyone,
I think I saw it was 2,700, something like that. It was a good, definitely a good crowd.
Shout out to Molly yet again. So Molly put a little bit of a post together on, I don't know if it was her Facebook or on some socials, and she just talked about the experience at the ground and certainly after the game, how the players engaged. I mean, it was great that Western United won their first match. We don't want them to think that the dub is that simple, that easy. So we'll see how they fare next week when they travel over to Wellington to play the Phoenix. So, yeah, I mean, I think statistically, and I do like a few stats myself, but Melbourne Victory looked like they probably should have taken the game away. Really didn't manage the wind very well. Like the number of times I saw them not playing a long ball, but giving the ball too much airtime, and it was really hampered by being held up so much. And I don't think the players were necessarily ready. I think defensively, both teams played quite well. The midfielder, I think Melbourne Victory did pretty well. I mean, I quite liked their game, but they just fell down trying to pass it through to their forwards, I don't think. And that's probably where the stats differed a little bit. I think it was United got 12 shots or something or other. I don't know if they were all on target, but and Melbourne Victory had 9. So they didn't really live up to the title holders from last season. I think they were a little bit flat on some of that, but there were some great things out there. It was great to see certainly parts of the match. Lovely to see Jess McDonald score a goal. Also great to see Alex Sinclair make it onto the pitch. Mm-hmm. And I think Molly talked to that as well. In terms of women's football in Victoria, she's been around for a long time. She's been successful for a long time as well, but just hasn't taken that step into the dub. So to see her to come on the pitch, I think that was pretty neat. Yeah, KK was out there. I don't think that it didn't feel like KK had super influence on the game. Yeah, I'm not sure what that was about. I'm not quite that smart to work it all out, but overall, a great game, I think, for the spectators. I think anyone who goes out to the ground was maybe happy with the food. I did see friend of the pod, Angela Christian Wilts, post a photo of a chivapi. Me being vegan, yes, it doesn't really float my boat, but you know, great to see that there are some options out there for people as well. But keen to hear other people's thoughts. I was probably, and a shout out to my wife as well, Emily, who's been involved in the women's game for a long time. I asked her if it was okay, and I signed her up for a Western United membership. We have long time been fans specifically of Melbourne Victory, and I've got a Victory membership, but I think it's great to support the clubs, and she quite likes that they're a very nice colour of green. So yeah, happy to have another Melbourne team in the comp, but yeah, not happy that Victory lost quite so much.
Crowd at the game, as was mentioned, 2,753, which is only 200 fewer than Western United's men's team's average. Make of that what you will.
And also, yeah. I wanted to give a quick shout out. It's great to see another supporters group in the league, the Western Core. They had set themselves up. So great to see another organised group. So hopefully we'll hear them cheering throughout the season.
To Stefan's point as well, I thought the ground from the broadcast at least looked a little bit scrappy. Certainly just around the edges and stuff like that didn't look ideal, but look, you know, I'm sure I love it when PFA come out with their reports on the actual grounds themselves, because it's less about me watching it on a broadcast and then, you know, putting some real magnets on it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That's one of the things that I like, that the PFA does and gives not just the pitch, but also the facilities grade, which is rated by the players, which I think is quite important. Yeah, good to see Western get a win. You know, obviously, it's kind of important. I know that we like to dunk on Western United as, you know, they play on a farm paddock and they have no fans. And, you know, both of those things are technically true. I'm not sure where Tyneside is. I'm not convinced that it's a real place.
Are you talking about the men's side of the football?
Yeah, or but in terms of the club, like in terms of their training ground is like, I don't know, a shed somewhere in Wyndham City Council. But yeah, it's really good that they got a win. I think it's important that these new teams become competitive quite quickly. Wellington we'll get onto in a second, but they were competitive all last year. They had a few results not go their way when they probably could have got a win. But yeah, I think, and also like City having been in terms of financial infrastructure, finances and infrastructure rather, have obviously been the kind of the leader in the league for quite a while. And Melbourne Victory have been really good on the pitch. They've obviously won the last two grand finals. And Melbourne City won the one before that. So like Western United have their work cut out for them in terms of both attracting and retaining talent and creating a winning culture kind of starts on day one. So it is good for them to get one over their rivals. The pitch, the point that you make around the pitch, I don't understand how like we have so much water in New South Wales at the moment and there it's so dry in some of these venues. It's quite mind-boggling. But yeah, hopefully things improve as we go on.
I think there's been plenty of rain and it's maybe comes down to the drainage of the ground or something as well. I'm not too sure, but yeah, I don't know. The other thing, and sorry, I already had my turn, but I'll have another quick turn if that's okay. I think the interesting thing for Western United, which could either play in their favour or not, is that we have a longer season. So you saw Wellington Phoenix, they came in when the season was quite short and didn't really have, you know, as they started to grow and get better and better, end of season done, see you next year. Western United have a whole big long season to sort of get themselves into gear. But if they're in gear already, they have to maintain it. And you think about this squad is a large amount of it is made up by NPLW players who have already played a super long season. I think they played 22 rounds or something thereabouts. So double that. Can this level of player sustain it for that duration of time? So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, so I think I made this point about the pitch to Stefan yesterday. It's very dry. It runs quicker than I think than the usual natural grass pitch. So we'll see who United are coached well and have scouted properly and perhaps need to adjust their game to the conditions. The point on the Chivapi I wanted to make is Chivapi obviously a Balkan food, but the host club at City Vista is George Cross or whatever their modern name is, a Maltese club. So good to see the cultural exchange of football extending to the canteen.
I mean, hopefully if there is one European nation that has been at the crossroads of, you know, cultural exchange in the last 2,000 years, it's probably Malta.
It is definitely Malta.
Yeah. They take bits and bobs from wherever they choose or whatever rocks up at the door. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there is some form of Maltese chivapi that we are not aware of.
And
I'm going to look that up. Leave that with me. Maltese chivapi.
And I will think maybe we could have pastizzis at City Vista by the end of the season, which would make
That's a good point.
Yep. But also, the thing I particularly like about City Vista, one of those smaller venues, you can have a ball land on the roof in the stand and as unfortunately happened to Millionaires, you can see someone kick the ball out of the stadium and into somebody's house. So, much to love about City Vista. But let's move on because Madge has a victory to celebrate. Brisbane Roar 2, Newcastle Jets 1. Go.
Yeah, very happy to kick off the season with a win. Compared to last season, we had a bit of a bumpy start. So to get off to a flying start with a 2-1 win was great. Yeah, interesting game. I think Brisbane, of course, we don't have Katrina Gorry for a while as she takes a well-earned rest from playing a lot of football since she's come back from her pregnancy. So not sure how long she'll be out for, but I think the team did really well. We had some youngsters in there, but I think it did show that there was a core of the team that was there last year. So I think Brisbane were able to look fairly cohesive starting off. And even just looking at the stats. So, Cheryl, I'm taking a leaf out of your book. I have been looking at the stats. I think a big difference between the two teams was the passing accuracy. So it just, because I felt when I was watching, I felt like Brisbane sort of dominated the game, but the Jets absolutely had some dangerous chances. So I think they had the same sort of shots on goal, which, and big ups to our new keeper, Hensley Handcuff. She pulled off some fantastic saves to make sure that
the Jets could... Fantastic name as well, may
yes,
I just say.
She did. I would have been nominating her for player of the match, except she was very lucky not to be given a red card, I think, for the penalty that she gave away. Didn't really get near the ball. So I think the Kate Jakovits was being a little bit kind in round one there and to the debutante American keeper. So, but yes, so that you know, because, you know, that player was, I can't even remember who it was, threw on goal. But so then, you know, the Jets absolutely deserved their goal there. I was really impressed with some of our younger players. So Annabelle Happenden, she played in centre of defence most of last year, but now she's gone out into the wing now that we've got Kaja Lind. She had a great game as well, a Swedish import. So dominating there in defence, got a lot of touches on the ball. But, yeah, Annie Happenden, and really impressed with Tamar Levin as well, making her debut, having just been announced publicly a day or so beforehand. But she came into the squad, and both of them were, you know, making some great runs up the wing on either side, and really just, you know, helping the impetus for the Raw running forward with then players like Marielleka and Shea Connors linking up there. And was really, really happy to see Sian Fryer grab this out the Raw second goal. She was out with an ACL last season. She had played the season beforehand, which was like the absolute stacked Brisbane Raw team that had Yallop and Gorry and Liv Chance and Emily Gilnick and Claire Polkinghorn. But yeah, she unfortunately got an ACL in that off season and wasn't able to play for the Raw last season. But she was great on the wing as well. She was like just running all game, and was, you know, duly rewarded with a goal at the near post off a great cross from Shea Connors as well, who was industrious as always there on the wing. Newcastle Jets, a lot of people have really got them way down low in their ladder predictions.
Yeah, just like me.
I think they could. I'm glad that we got them early, because I think they could act really get a run on, because I think they've got some really quality American imports. And I think once they get settled into the team and they perhaps get a bit more chemistry going, they might cause some problems. So it'll be interesting to see how they progress, because they definitely had their chances. And yeah, thanks to some fantastic keeping and some, you know, scrambling defence and Jamila Rankin's wonderful sliding tackles. I will never get tired of a sliding tackler. But yeah, so overall, happy with the performance. I think Gareth McPherson also rotated the squad a fair bit. So Mariella Echo, I think, went off at halftime. And I think he sort of said he was like trying to get some minutes into the legs of quite a few players, knowing that I don't think they had any trial games unless they had things behind closed doors, unlike some of the other teams I know have had trial games pre-season as well. So they're probably looking to manage minutes, you know, in the first few rounds as well. So happy that we've got the win. Canberra next week will be interesting. I think, you know, the defence for Raw is definitely looking, I think, better than last season. And it's actually nice being able to bring someone like a Jessie Rashart on later in the game, because I think her speed with tired legs for defences and other people on the team was invaluable, being able to get back and cover late in the game when Newcastle were really pressing for the equaliser. So, yeah, pretty happy. Things to improve on, and some, you know, great performances from our younger players.
Yeah, and to that point about the Jets match, Sarah Griffith very from, I think, Newcastle Jets, especially in the first half. So
yes,
was just about to say exactly the same thing. Yes. Super impressed with her.
Yes, yep.
And she will be leading the charge to make my prediction of them getting the wooden spoon look ridiculous, I suspect. But
35th overall pick in the NWSL draft. Not a bad signing for Newcastle at all.
Not at all. So on to the Sunday games. And of course, another thing that you love to see, Wellington Phoenix finally playing a genuine home game. So that was at the Caketon in Wellington. Not just that, but a record crowd. Blown A-League Women's regular season match, 5,213. So well done to everyone involved there. Unfortunately, the result didn't go their way. Melbourne City winning by 4-1. But shout out to Ava Pritchard, who scored Wellington Phoenix's first goal ever as an A-League Women's team's last, and then scored a consolation goal, so their first goal in New Zealand. But not sure who wants to take this up. Melbourne City. After I thought a fairly even first half, they really just ran away with it after the break.
I was impressed with Wellington's resilience in the back half, defensive midfield, until it kind of all fell apart. I got to say, I think it was about 26 minutes in. Riley Henry had one of the worst attempts on goal I've ever seen in my 15 years of watching the women's league. Mm-hmm. There was a second attempt. She was standing alone on the byline and she just kicked the ball out. And I was like, what is going on? I'll find the footage, but it was very funny. Yes. But yeah, once Rojas kind of took control of the game down that left-hand side, she was all over Wellington in that second half. Mm-hmm. Created the first goal for Briley Henry, then scored that second goal for herself, and won the penalty. I think it was McKeegan conceded the penalty for the Knicks. For me, it wasn't so much that Wellington looked overawed. Like, they looked like they were prepared to be there for a big game, and obviously the club had been trying to get 10K to this game. I think 5,000 for a first home game in history, when fans don't really know what they're kind of turning up to in terms of performance against a very strong team in Melbourne City, I think is quite commendable. I don't think Wellington were overawed. I just think they were beaten by a quality team. Mm-hmm. Melbourne City played the way that you know Melbourne City were going to play, kept the ball, made Wellington run around, and made life hard for them when they didn't have the ball. When Wellington did have the ball, Wellington had more shots than Melbourne City. But as we said before, as Chez was saying around the Matildas game, like, it doesn't matter what you do with them if you don't put them in the net. Impressed with Melbourne City. Definitely good signs for Wellington though. Don't know if. As you were mentioning, I think that the goal for Wellington has actually been credited as an own goal.
No, well, that's
that'll have to go to the dubious goals committee, I'm sure.
So maybe the first ever goal in New Zealand still up for grabs then. Kate Taylor's been so impressive so far, but I think that there's, shall we say, lessons to be learned about how to deal with tricky forwards like Kote Rojas. I mean, maybe this is just me, but I was thinking, as I was watching the footage, Kate, you're bigger than her. Just knock her over. She's not in a dangerous position, and deal with the free kick. But, you know, there's Wellington's still a very young side. And also, big shout out to Wellington Phoenix defender Claudia Chico, making her A-League Women debut. And that's why I'm celebrating with a glass of red wine right as we speak.
Yeah, so, the point Melbourne, that you make about... go on, Chaz.
I was going to say, I think Melbourne City is actually a younger side than what we've sometimes seen them. Yeah. I mean, Rojas may be a little bit different, but the players that I liked, and I'll steal the show a little bit at the moment, but then I'll shut up. Galich, I thought, played a wonderful game, and I'm very quickly getting to be a very, very big fan of hers, and I look forward to her future. Davidson, I thought, played a really good match. Torpy played a good match. Henry did some good stuff. She may have executed poorly at the end, but I cannot tell you how many games I've seen of Ellie Carpenter, who had some shockers when she was of a similar age. So some of it is, you know, you've got the potential. You just need to develop all the stuff that goes around the potential. I think Naomi Thomas-Chinema played a pretty good game as well. Sally James in goal. You know, I think even the internationals that came over didn't have as much of an influence as some of these young Australians who are playing the game. So for me, I think Melbourne City look like, if they can keep these players around and, you know, grow them through their academy, if you want to call it that, I think they look pretty good. Everyone's talked already about Wellington, but lovely to see them out there at home. I thought that was beautiful. I love the opening ceremony, if you want to call it that. So, yeah, all good.
Yeah.
On the subject of all drive and no putt, Amina Ekic's miss must go down as one of the great turns and great misses in A-League women's history. Absolutely roasted her defender and then just passed the ball over the byline. But yeah, I was really impressed with her, as well as obviously like Rihanna Polachina. We all know what we're getting. She's very, very good at football, and that goal into the bottom corner, just absolutely beautiful, lovely technique, and her penalty was brilliant as well.
Yeah, I thought Mackenzie Barry defended that properly. She gave her a tiny little gap to hit for the far corner. It's just that Polachina was good enough to hit it, and so it's just occurred to me how odd that. Maybe the game in Wellington was the least wind-affected game of the round, because let's move on to the final game. Adelaide United 1, Sydney FC 0 at Service FM Stadium, and Amelia Murray getting an 88th-minute winner. I watched the mini-match on Paramount, but did anyone have any particular takes from this game?
Same as the other one. Just Sydney did everything they could to win this game. There was one attempt by Courtney Vine in... I'm going to say it was the first half where she went to head of this ball, and she just, because of the wind, she just looked like she wasn't confident as to whether she was going to be able to head it just down low or whether she was going to have to dive for it. She did neither. But it was one of those games, as you saw, with like the fact that like the goal that Adelaide scored to win the match, to me, summed up the whole game. Like everybody was just kind of caught in two minds. Adelaide happened to get the header. Wyman was in kind of no man's land, and the ball went in. Like it just felt like that. It felt like it was going to be a miracle goal that won it either way, because the teams were just doing so much to score, and nothing was coming off. But I think looking at it from a Sydney perspective, you wouldn't be worried. But if you're looking at it from a holistic perspective, this means that both Sydney and Melbourne Victory have dropped points on the opening day. And I know that it's a much longer season, and that obviously will mean less, but it means that these teams are not, you know, by any stretch infallible. Like they're there to be beaten, and full credit to Adelaide for taking the opportunity when they did.
It means it's going to be a great season. If we're seeing some of the teams that you expect to win haven't won, I think that's brilliant for the fans to know that there's going to be a real contest, hopefully each and every match that we see. Going back to stats again, and the reason that I like stats, if people want to know, is that it takes my emotions out of the equation, because like, football is a very emotive game.
I don't understand anything of what you just said. I'm sorry.
So if I'm looking at it, I just, you know, it looks like on the game sheet, it looks like Adelaide were all over Sydney. I have not watched the match highlights. I have not watched the full game or anything like that. But, you know, it looks like it's almost something that you would traditionally see reversed. So this is exciting for Adelaide to see, you know, if they can put in such a top performance. I think it's great.
Yeah, so my only point was I am very disappointed that Abby Lemon did not make her A-League Women debut, but hopefully that happens next week when I'm at Cromer Park for Sydney FC versus Melbourne Victory. So almost near the end, we'll just breeze through the overseas results, so the standard Sam Kerr goal and the standard Chelsea battering of Tottenham at home. In honour of friend of Beyond 90, Lockie France, let's talk about his beloved Manchester United coming from behind to beat Arsenal by 3-2 with a 91st-minute winner from his beloved Alessio Russo, who's just doing more great things. And also, the thing that caught my eye, West Ham bringing their typical chaos, and they couldn't do it the easy way. They beat the bottom team, Leicester City, by 1-0. Goal in the 88th minute from Ireland's own Izzy Atkinson. And even after that, they needed a goal line clearance about 10 blocks in the penalty box. And Leicester had a goal ruled out for offside. So that is the only way that West Ham ever seemed to win any kind of games. What else was there? Nothing. Joe Montemurro's Juventus nearly giving him a heart attack. Down 1-0 to Parma as they enter stoppage time. Then they score in the 92nd and 96th minute to win the game. More game time for Anna Margraf, but her SV Meppen lost in the German Cup round of 16 to Freiburg, and we'll get on to Denmark in a minute. But I think we're just about done for and we're ready for our favourite segment, Queens of the Week. So who would like to go first?
I feel like I would copy someone's homework if I go first, because the list that's in there, but
I can edit it so it doesn't look like you didn't copy anyone.
Yes, that's true. I'll give a quick shout out to Kaia Simon. We saw on socials that she's had her surgery a couple of weeks ago now, and she's on the recovery track. I don't know what her recovery looks like for World Cup. I'm thinking with 240 days, it looks a lot risky. But yeah, you know, always Kaya's one of my favorite players. I think she can be so exciting on the pitch, and I just hope that her recovery goes as smoothly as possible.
Sure.
I'll go next. No one's going to have mine, but yeah, I'm going to give a shout out to Tamar Levin, who made her debut for the Brisbane Roar after just being signed or announced as a signing a couple of days before the game. I thought she had an amazing game at left back. She was really composed on the ball. I think she's gotten a lot of plaudits playing for the QAS team. So no doubt Gareth McPherson knew a lot about her and her talents, so had no worries about starting her in the first round of the season. And yeah, just an amazing game. And having a look at the stats, I wasn't imagining it. She had some, you know, great pass completion, made some really good successful runs as well. So congrats, Tamar. And also just a quick shout out again to some of the new fan groups that we've seen around. So the Western Core, and then over in New Zealand, I know we've had the little corner of yellow that were following the team last season. And I think they were back over there in Wellington, but also there's a new group, Flight of the Knicks as well. So yes, setting themselves up over in Wellington. So it's fantastic to see that fan culture growing.
Yep. Okay. Stefan, I think I'll go with you next.
Sure. I managed to catch up briefly with Heather Reid at the McKellar Park on Saturday. She added to her accolades this week after being inducted into the University of Canberra Walk of Fame. You'll see on the pod post the list of incredible achievements that Heather's managed to attain over her many, many years in sports administration. So it was a real pleasure to talk with her. She put a lovely little note in my copy of her book as well. So it was really, really nice to chat with her. But she was one of 22 inductees to the Walk of Fame, and the Walk recognised her journey all the way from a UC student through to, you know, Football Australia board membership before retiring in recent years. And of course, she was the Capital Football CEO for 12 years and basically set up Canberra United. So we all have a lot to thank her for. But very quickly before I go, I'm looking forward to catching up with you, Madge, up in Brisbane next week.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. And just wanted to mention also the interesting times I had with streaming over the weekend. I thought I was going to be able to do everything through 10Play as per the announcements. Mm-hmm. Turned out that with the simultaneous kickoffs, you actually have to go to Paramount to get replays unless you go to KeepUp. Thanks, Dale, for your highlights find on the KeepUp YouTube. So it was a bit of a streaming journey for us on the week, or for me certainly on the weekend. I had no idea that I would have to end up going to Paramount to see the detail of the games that are on simultaneously. So that was a bit of a surprise. But that's me done. Thank you.
Stefan, yours is the homework that I was going to copy. So a big shout out to Heather Reid as well. I'm a big fan on your H.
To Dale, you've got, I love your selection for Queens of the Week.
Oh, yes, that leaves me. Some of you may know the Men's World Cup kicked off last night. Yeah, I know. They let men play football now. That's very strange, strange times. But my three queens of the week are Salima Mukasanga from Rwanda, Stephanie Frappar from France, and Yoshimi Yamashita from Japan, who are the first three women to officiate at a Men's World Cup. Stephanie Frappar, I believe she refereed the UEFA Super Cup final earlier this year. Yoshimi Yamashita has refereed game in which Australia played, the Olympic women's qualifying, and she also refereed Melbourne City's game against Jeonnam Dragons, I believe, in the ACL. So she's three very qualified referees, and we wish them well. Good to see that they're starting to have more of an impact in men's football with women's officials. Really lovely to see.
Yeah, love that. for sure. Apologies, I'm going to hog the mic for a bit. So Beyond 90 alumnus Marissa Lordanik, I think, sent a direct message to me during the week, my brand is unstoppable, and it was incredibly unstoppable this week. So I have four queens. Firstly, Republic of Ireland international Louise Quinn wore the captain's armband on her 100th international appearance, and she scored. She scored with a tackle, but she still scored. I'll put the video in the pod notes in case you want to see how this happened. Two, Matilda McNamara. We mentioned her Matilda's debut, but she flew back to Denmark and then was named player of the match as AGF defeated Sundby by 1-0. So a big week for her. So third queen of the week, Philippines international Jacqueline Savitsky was named as the Western United captain. Didn't get on the field against Victory, but that's only a matter of time. Lovely to see the first Filipina to play A-League women is also the first Filipina to captain an A-League women side. And fourth, so we've had Ireland, a futsal player, and Philippines. So the only thing left is Blacktown's own Emily Koss, who made her A-League women debut for Melbourne Victory against Western United. She's had quite the journey. She's played in NPL New South Wales for, I think, North Shore Mariners, Marconi Stallions, Sydney Olympic and Blacktown Spartans. She moved to NPL Victoria this year with the wonderfully named Box Hill Pythagoras United. And she's clearly impressed enough to get a contract. Well done to you, Emily. So I think that's it, unless someone has anything else to add. No, that's good. Okay, no worries. Well, thanks for joining us once again for this episode 123 of the Beyond 90 podcast. On behalf of Stefan Mobus, Dale Roots, Magellicard, and Cheryl Downs, this is Eric Subihano signing off, wishing you a life full of good vibes. Get more tattoos. And if you're a razzler, if you're a player, I hope you razzle every time the ball's at your feet. See you next week.